And welcome to the Rice Ricky Sanchez pre-show, the 60-second pre-show that happens before our live show.
It's huge. And yeah, there's so many interesting nuggets in here that people just like wouldn't get.
They miss
the regular show. They miss it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other, it doesn't make the recorded show, so it's only the live people that get this part of it. So.
And how lucky do they feel?
Oh my goodness. I can't even imagine. Oh my goodness. Why don't you give them? All right. We all know you're an insider and you don't in everything in sports and life and everything. Politics. Why don't you give them a scoop that they're not going to get during the regular pod as we wait for people to filter in?
A scoop.
Yeah. Do you have any scoop?
A scoop, a big scoop. What? Let me just like consult my list of scoops. I got so many of them.
Yeah. Check your drafts.
Check my drafts. I got a bunch of scoops here. People are getting traded. You know who sucks? That's my scoop. My scoop is, you know who sucks? And the answer is Brian Windhorst. Just like, what a miserable person to listen to. Just seems like an absolute nightmare. Everything he says is with like the most smug thing possible. Like it's the most innovative thing anyone's ever said.
Yeah. He's always with it. So, Zach. Yeah. So there's the rise here. I want to actually keep talking about this. All right, just leave this in. I'll leave this in. CJ, leave this in. So they do post game pods with Zach and Windhorst after each finals game, and I like listening to Zach.
Yeah, and their guests have been nice. Tyrese Haliburton seems awesome.
But I, as
everybody's
soon
got
as
interesting
I,
thing to say. But then it's here comes Windhorst, and it's like, oh my god.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's Windhorst going on for like 8 minutes about like the most obvious fact.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
And it's not even his like specialty.
One time he had like a long, just sort of preamble about how like he's not good at like analyzing the game. He's like, that's not what I'm here to do. And it's like, but you're doing it.
Yeah.
And he talked for so long about like how that's not what his specialty is. No one's gonna confuse him for someone who does that. It's like, but you're doing it. You're doing it right now. And I can't press fast forward hard enough to get through how long this is taking.
I think Killikow needs to do a Windhorst impression.
I'm in for that.
I've yet to hear a good Windhorst impression. All right, let's start. The Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented. What a scoop that was, honestly.
The Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast
is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And just one Ricky. And Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter, statesidevodka.com. On the show today, Ben Simmons rumors rage on, this time with the Sacramento Kings. I have a question for Mike about Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard. Matisse Thybulle starring for the Boomers for the Australian Olympic team in the Olympics. And the Sixers hire a new CEO. Some AMA questions from Twitter, back to the mailbag, maybe some live questions. We are live right now, recording live on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter. Make sure you ask us a question. We could get to that later when we get to CJ. And one quick plug, a new Carl Landry Record Club podcast, our music podcast with me and Mutlu, this week features albums from Girl in Red and My Bloody Valentine. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here. Oh!
We will write y'all.
Welcome to the Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who for the first time is not in the noisy place in the podcast. That is Mike Levin.
You're the noisy place?
Oh boy. So I'm in a hotel in New York again, and it is against the street I think the noisiest street in all of New York. The honking, wait till you hear it. It's so, I'm never going to sleep. The honking and the fucking sirens, wait till, there's so many hot takes from the south. Yeah.
It's crazy that, like, you know, for there to be action on the street as of like, actually like 9:45 when you go to bed.
Yes.
Like the idea that people would not realize that it's bedtime for you.
You don't have to be an asshole. I mean,
no, but the city that never sleeps, for a guy that loves to go to sleep from hours 7:45 to 3:01 a.m.
Oh, I'm going to send you an email at 4 a.m. tomorrow morning just to.
I'll still be up on LA time, baby. Yeah.
It's not so much, it's not that there's people or any of that. It's just the honking. Yeah. It's just the honking.
Well, interesting. So I will come up with something that's honking rather than a fire alarm.
Okay. Oh, that I have to do every time
there's
something different.
Yeah, there's something different there. We'll take pitches. I don't feel like thinking anymore. So if someone wants to send us pitches of what Spike should do when people honk, we'll take it.
So the Olympics are going on, or the exhibition game so far, right, for the Olympics going on right now. And Matisse Thybulle is playing in them for the Australian national team and has played really well, Australian national team beating the U.S. We had a question from Drake. He says, Matisse is looking very confident and actually can play offense for Australia. I get the main part of it is the competition level, but do you guys think Ben skipping the Olympics was a mistake? The level-headed response is to wait and see, but he's probably gone and none of us should have to deal with another offseason of shooting and pickup games. Would have rather seen him play in competitive basketball and repair his confidence. What do you think? Do you think it was a mistake for him not to play?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think as far as quickly getting past the last thing people saw him do, going and playing in Australia and playing with guys that, I don't know how much Ben has played with those guys, but
right,
playing with guys he presumably feels comfortable with, maybe would allow him to just like get that taste out of his mouth and the public to move on seeing him and stuff. But I don't know. I mean, if the idea is he's going to spend the offseason reworking his shot, then like you'd rather, I don't know if that's the case, but or what we should believe, but you know, you'd rather him be in a place that is, you know, that's all he has to do: wake up, eat right, work out, go to bed. Like that's rather than having to deal with like national team duties.
I do think that regardless of what Simmons did, that a lot of the players that do play there, it's a positive. You know, I think it can only be a positive for Thybulle to play in pressure filled. Every game in the Olympics is pressure filled. You know, you're generally playing with veterans, you know, who want to win. It does seem historically for U.S. players, actually not just for U.S. players, for everyone, that it's a really positive experience. So regardless of Ben, I didn't mean to turn into a Ben conversation. I think it's really positive for Thybulle, and it's nice to see him out there, you know, hitting shots and playing defense that
totally
way.
Yeah. Hitting shots off the dribble.
Yeah.
I will always hold on to the idea, the little kernels of Matisse as like as someone who can create a little bit,
a little bit
off the dribble, a little bit passing, a little bit for himself, weird angles. It's not close to being there yet.
Right.
But I see like the beginnings, like really like you put popcorn in the microwave and it just starts to crack a little bit. I'm just like, I see that little, like that little white thing coming out, being like, ah, that's something. So that's what I'm looking out for. And he has done that in Australia, and it's fun to just see him be happy and play and not have to worry about anything with the Sixers. And like, you know, a ridiculous block on Durant, a block from behind on Dame. Like he's such a special player and incredibly fun to watch. And he's been hitting shots in Australia, which makes it, you know, obviously way more palatable everywhere. But even if he never changed, even if he never got better as a shooter, simply not having Ben Simmons on this team and replacing Dwight with a stretch five who can shoot a little bit would make things way easier for Matisse to be extremely useful to this team and not as much of a, you know, an additional offensive burden with the other guys that have similar weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the talk about Ben has been, well, make him a power forward or whatever. But truthfully, Thibault makes more sense in that role than Ben does, I think, just because he'll stand in the corner and shoot. It is amazing to me to see NBA players play a full season and then go and do this. I think it's really cool. You know, I saw the quote about Booker, because Booker's eventually going to go out there after he plays in the finals. And I was actually, when I was watching the U.S. team, I was watching Durant. And I'm just like, holy fuck, man. This guy's coming off an Achilles, was just playing 50 minutes a game in the playoffs, and then goes to play in the Olympics. I think the thing that I like about great basketball players, it seems more than other sports, is how much they like playing. And Durant's one of those guys. It seems like Booker's one of those guys. For them to play an entire season and then go do this, you just have to really, really, really like playing. And I think that they do. I think it's just always been cool to me to see that about basketball players.
Totally. It's also just easier to do basketball than really any other sport, right? I mean, I guess you could just pitch with one other guy. And I guess you could throw and run routes and stuff with not as much, but like there's really not much you need to just work out and work on your shot or whatever it is. And yeah, it seems like those guys are going to play anyway. It's not like the guys who aren't playing basketball, maybe they take 3 weeks, 6 weeks off or something like that. They're going to get back in the gym and play here and try to play hard and train themselves and get better anyway. So the guys that are doing it there are just like, well, I may as well do it with stakes.
Right.
But it is impressive, especially KD after the Achilles, and to look as good as he did. He's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, he loves it. I mean, he just loves playing it. During the playoffs, I've done sort of a 180 on Durant. I used to think he was so lame, but he just seems so human to me now. He seems like the most human of any NBA player to me. And he just really, really loves playing. So there are some lame things about him, but there's lame things about all of us. So, you know,
I have a ton of things about myself that I could complain about and trash on a podcast. I'm going to do KD burners, except for like ripping myself. That feels like a better use of time. Like, not to build myself up, to just be like, you suck, you fucking loser.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk for a second about the finals?
Yeah, actually, before we do, actually, because there's a DraftKings final special, let's talk about it right after this. The Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I had mentioned that DraftKings was doing this thing earlier, that if you bet on any pro basketball team to win, for new users, you get 100-1 odds. For the rest of the season, it's 150-1 odds for new users. Yeah, 150. And golf's oldest and last major of the year is this weekend. I know I'm a big golf guy. You're a big golf guy. So, yeah. So DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app, gives you a chance to land in the green. 50-1 odds on any golfer sinking at least one birdie this weekend. We know that's going to happen. So if you haven't tried DraftKings, now's the time. Place a pre-tournament wager of $1 on any golf outcome to be eligible to cash $50 in free credits if a golfer sinks a birdie. 50-1 odds on any golfer sinking a birdie during this weekend's tournament. 50-1 odds. Come on. I mean, somebody's going to hit a birdie. I don't know. I know that much about golf. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code RTRS when you sign up to turn $1 into $50 in free credits if any golfer sinks a birdie this weekend. That's code RTRS to turn $1 into $50 in free credits for a limited time. Only a DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. NJ, Indiana, or PA only. New customers only. Winnings paid out and site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. All right.
I got something to say. Where I'm sitting right now, and this is not going to help my cause of saying that I'm not high for the podcasts, but the shadow of myself looks like a bird.
It does.
Like a penguin a little bit.
It does. It reminds me of the scene in, what's the Norm Macdonald movie where there's the penguin in the he's high and there's a not Norm Macdonald, the Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, Billy Madison.
Billy Madison.
Yeah. I just ate an apple. This is not a high thought, but it is something like it. And I'm going to just, every time I don't know what to say, I'm just going to penguin out a little bit.
Oh man, you got to do video. So let me ask you this about the finals. Watching these finals, and then we'll just talk about them. Watching these finals, what does it make you think in comparison to the Sixers? Are they both, like, I thought the Suns were a clear level up of the Sixers, and I thought the Bucks were a regular level up. To me, watching these games makes me think that they were like significantly better. What do you think watching these teams compared to the way the Sixers were this year?
I feel like the Suns are very good and things are connecting for them at the right time. They're short a couple guys, missing
Dario thing is hurting them. Yeah.
And they've, you know, coalesced at the right time, and Milwaukee has just survived in a bunch of different ways. But like, I don't know. I know this is like not an exciting thing to say, but like the Sixers could have played better and could have gotten to this place. Like they didn't. Like they're not as good. But I just think that if you replace Milwaukee with Philadelphia right now in this Suns series, I think the series would go 6 or 7. I don't know. I think the Suns would probably win at this point, judging by how good they look now and how much the Sixers imploded in various ways. But like, I don't think it would be hard to imagine. Like the Sixers probably still have, as Embiid, like the best, or depending on how Booker or CP is playing, second best player in the series. I think it's just easy to look at what happened and say like, well, that is obviously the case. But I do think that the Sixers at times looked like one of these teams. They did not look like one of these teams in the Atlanta series for sure. They stopped doing what they were good at. They, you know, everything that we know. But so, I don't think that they were, I don't think that you finish number one in the playoffs and have as good or in the regular season and have as good player as Joel Embiid and like you're the, you know, 2015 Hawks or whatever it is. I just don't think that's indicative of who they are.
So what do you, who do you think wins the series? It's actually become like a good series, and a lot of credit to Giannis, and I guess Budenholzer to some extent, and they have a guard who's a second guard who's capable of, you know, running some offense and being a ball handler, but not running everything through Giannis, and Giannis sort of being a dirty work guy. Totally. I mean, that's huge, huge. I mean, you always looked at him and guessed he could do it, but for a superstar to do that, I think is really, you know, it's admirable. It takes a lot to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, I was, you know, knocking on Giannis for the last couple months because of his limitations, and especially in a playoff atmosphere when teams focus up on him. I was always in the situation of like, especially when they covered when the Sixers played him, it would be like just cover Embiid, Giannis with Embiid, because he doesn't have moves. He doesn't have ways to do that. But now allowing him to be a roller and a guy that just like goes and gets everything and works his ass off defensively and gets the ball out of his hands, doesn't just like sit with it for a long time, which he had done previously this season in the playoffs and definitely earlier in his career. He's incredibly good. Like he's incredibly good. He's a very unique type of player. And I think he was reluctant, as a lot of guys are, to not be the guy to handle the ball all the time. And obviously that's very relevant with Ben. But as the player that he's been, which is screening, rolling, moving, cutting, offensive rebounds, just being long and big and anticipating, like all that stuff, like he's an incredible player, and they're better because of it. And Chris Middleton is hitting a ton of shots. He has proven himself to be like an absolutely excellent basketball player. Everything's just tough on him, or tough for him. There's no easy looks for Chris Middleton, and for him to hit that many tough shots, it's incredible.
Mike the Penguin.
That's good.
Bird.
Yeah. Penguin is way better than me. I'm just going to replace myself with Penguin.
It's so good. I'm sorry.
But yeah, even with Drew's weaknesses offensively, they just like have enough. Like it's just so much of the finals, once you've gotten this far in the playoffs, is just like surviving and doing like any little bit it takes to survive. And Milwaukee shot like 40% from the field, I think, in this game.
Yeah.
But because they just worked their asses off, they had 17 offensive rebounds to Phoenix's 5. They had 5 turnovers to Phoenix's 17. And it's just like every little advantage, they took 19 more shots. Like, it's the kind of thing that what this finals is teaching me is that you're going to sacrifice something against another good team. There's something that you're going to have to sacrifice. Like Phoenix has pretty much marched through the playoffs with little resistance, not a ton of resistance, based on having 2 excellent ball handlers and a third that can come off the bench and apply pressure and be a little jitterbug scorer, and a hard roller and a bunch of slightly undersized I mean, not undersized for wings, but undersized for like a traditional power forward size wise on the wing, just like capable of hitting shots. And they move the ball fast and they screen hard and everything. But that means eventually that they're giving up offensive rebounds because they have a ton of guys that just spread the floor and are not specializing in like being big vacuums up there. And so Milwaukee took advantage of that here. You're not going to be able to be good at everything at all times. And it's just about adjusting to try to like capitalize on people's mistakes. And Milwaukee's done a great job of capitalizing on Phoenix's mistakes and getting out in transition and getting easy buckets with their length and toughness. And Phoenix is now on their heels.
Well, it, you know, like you say that you're not going to be able to do everything and the other team's going to take, you know, something, you're not going to be able to do something. That was just to bring it back to the Sixers and then get back to the thing. The Sixers didn't really have a lot of things. That's
no,
the problem.
Offensively, they had almost no things at all.
They had one thing, you know, they had Joel initiating.
Once they took away transition, once transition was taken away from them, it was like, what else are we going to go to? We're going to do the stand around stuff.
Yeah. And a transition pretty much goes away for everybody once the playoffs get tough too. But the other thing that I think it does for Giannis, and I made jokes about him, and I still think it's a little bit true, but I think this this series has changed some of it for me, is I always used to say, he's like, oh, he's just a big Westbrook. Like, that's all he is. It's like, you know, eventually he's just going to keep running into the lane, running. He didn't have enough skills, but he like realized, or they realized, that that's what he was. And this makes him not that, you know, it just turns him into a different player. And I don't know who's going to win. I think I'd probably still bet on the Suns, but I'm not going to be surprised no matter who wins. And it is nice to see, even though I'm sad that he got hurt, it's nice to see the Suns missing Dario that much. Mm-hmm. Because when they get Ayton into foul trouble, they really have nothing to go to afterwards. Yeah. So
did you see the video of Dario reacting to Monty Williams in the locker room?
It was awesome. It was awesome. Dario was born to be a meme at some point.
He's a beautiful man. What a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Just such, yep. there's an earnestness. I wouldn't say this about all of them, but the Eastern Europeans who the Sixers have had, specifically Dario and Korkmaz, I guess, there's just such an earnestness to them.
Yes, yeah.
That it makes them so lovable and delightful. And it's really, really funny to watch them. Just, there's no trying. It is just like, that's who they are. And they're right on the surface. I really want to play hard for my guys. And I want to like react honestly to things. It's a delight.
It's kid-like almost, you know, like kids don't know how to lie and they don't know how to cover up when, you know, when something smells or whatever. It's like, I can imagine if something smells, Dario just going like this, you know? So
for sure. I don't think that's all painting with a big broad brush here. I think it's just specifically to Dario and Korkmaz who have had those.
Maybe. Yeah. Just,
like really, they are exactly who they are around here.
Maybe it's just them in particular, but I think sometimes when a player, like I remember when I was interviewing Korkmaz, when I was at the facility, when there was a pod with Korkmaz, when he speaks English as a second language, it's a little harder, I think, sometimes to like not be just genuine, and it's harder to be deceptive or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Korkmaz seemed that way. So, but yeah, they both seem like, I mean, when we met Dario, when he was at the live pod, he was awesome. And Korkmaz seemed like a really nice guy as well. So there was a story this week, another Ben Simmons trade story. Of Shams came out with the story that, you know, the Sixers have opened trade talks with everybody. And then Mark Stein earlier today said that, you know, he would be very surprised if he was on the team next year. So the story that came out in a couple of different places is the Kings. Very different offers and ask here. So the Kings apparently launch your hats to offer Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, and a first. Whereas the Sixers would want either De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton and at least three first round picks, which is a slightly different offer.
Yeah.
If you had a choice between Fox and Halliburton, you would take Fox though, right?
I love Tyrese Halliburton and have for years. I think he's just an excellent player. I think Halliburton fits a Halliburton maxi backcourt is awesome and would be very, very cool and would work. Maxi Fox would not. there's not enough shooting there. Both guys are pretty on ball. They're similar guys. Both went to Kentucky, and that doesn't have anything to do with it. But I like De'Aaron Fox a lot. I would assume that if they get De'Aaron Fox, then it would mean that Maxey is getting sent out or something. Maybe not. Maybe they just
where's the first guard,
the sixth man type of thing.
Yeah.
So I love. I think the question is, could you get if it's Fox, it's pretty much just going to be Fox for Simmons. And Fox is obviously more ready now, obviously more better, an extremely good ball handler, excellent in transition, fast as hell, probably the only guy in the league or one of them that's faster than Simmons.
And a better chance that he's specifically what they need than Halliburton.
That's probably true. I think Halliburton is a special player and a better shooter than Fox is, and has more versatility on the defensive end, I think. And I believe in, even though Halliburton is a little bit funky and unconventional, I believe in the idea that he's just smart enough and good enough to like figure stuff out, but he's not as naturally good as like a penetrator as Fox is. It'll take him some time. Yeah, it'd be tough. I think the Halliburton trade would be Halliburton, Buddy Hield, and probably like Bagley's expiring contract. And I would ask for a pick 100%. I think they have number 9 for Simmons, and the Fox one would be kind of just the one thing. And so if you got all those things, could you reroute Bagley 9 and maybe George Hill for like another guy, and then make that part of the
package
for
Simmons? They're still missing the guy. Like I actually don't want either of them. I think De'Aaron Fox is good, but he's not. They just got to find a way to get shit to trade for a guy like the guy.
Fox is very good. He's not a natural shooter. He's improved, but is a willing shooter. And there's enough in his pull up game in like the middle distance in the Chris Paul, Devin Booker sort of pulling up from there. And he has that floater also where you think like eventually he's going to be able to shoot. And he's certainly a willing shooter. I'm not ruling out the idea that he comes to Philadelphia and like a shoulder falls off or something, but he's very good. And like there's a specialness to him as a kid. There's a specialness to him. Like he's coming into his own right now. He averaged like 24, 25 points a game. Halliburton I love, but is not quite ready to be like, I have the ball at the ends of games. Whereas Fox, I think is he has never played in a meaningful game as a member of the Sacramento Kings, but I think would be in a better position there. It's interesting. I don't, compared to some of the other offers that are on the table, Fox or Halliburton and Buddy Hield plus stuff to trade in rerouting for another star would not be the worst of it for sure.
Yeah. I still think it's going to be three way somehow. There don't look like any two team trade scenarios that make any sense to me, but who knows? So to that end, and I think I know the answer to this, but then like there's a part B. If it was Lillard or Beal, who would you prefer?
I would say Lillard. I think he's a better player. He's probably, right. He's what, like 3 years older? Two and a half years older, but
3 years
older. I would still say Lillard, yeah.
Okay, so I asked that. What do you think the difference is between the two players? And I know the difference in play, but I've been thinking about it more. And even though Bradley Beal is really good and I would be fine with it, I think there's actually, when I think about it, a significant difference between in stature or in goodness between the two players. Like I think Lillard is a clear level up on Beal. And I wonder if Beal, I wonder if it isn't just like Lillard or bust almost. Like I wonder if Beal is good enough. He's good, but I wonder if he's good enough. What do you think the difference is between the two guys?
Like Beal's a better defensive player. And so I think that you don't have to worry about, you know, this is not the first factor you think about when trading Ben Simmons, a theoretical franchise cornerstone here, paying to be one. But if you like Seth Curry and think he's very valuable, Seth Curry, Dame Lillard is tough. Seth Curry, Brad Beal is very playable.
But you can't really
same with Maxi.
But you can't really make a decision.
No, part of that. We watched in the playoffs of Seth Curry get exposed defensively over and over and over again. And so if you then have two of those guys that are capable of that, which Dame hasn't been. He's been in the conference finals once, but hasn't been. And with CJ there, who is arguably as bad or worse of a defender. I think the youth is a factor. The history of short point guards having career success into their mid-30s, that list is small. I would say they both seem like great guys and great like locker room leaders and stuff. I think Dame is certainly more of a threat shooting off the dribble, more of a threat in the pick and roll. But like size does matter. And there are some times when if you have too many short guys out there, then they're just not getting it. Brad is capable of rising up in a way that Dame just isn't and certainly won't be as his career starts to wind down. So I don't think it's that far off. I would prefer Dame. But I don't think it's a clear, massive step down considering everything else. The other part of it is that like the reason the Washington trade doesn't really make sense. I don't think that Washington is a team that is just dying to rebuild some more.
I agree.
So I think, agree.
Yeah,
like obviously Westbrook Simmons doesn't work together. And so I think that they would be.
Oh, it'd be so funny though.
That would be part of if Beal is moved into the trade, it would definitely be a three team situation for sure.
Yeah.
Whereas in Portland, that makes more sense for Ben and stuff to go there and for them to like stay good enough, but not fully rebuild. Cause I don't think that they're interested in that.
I know you're going to discount this, but I just can't imagine a world in which I think it's possible the Sixers could end up with Lillard, but I cannot imagine a world in which here is one of the, if not the most popular player in Trailblazers history, mm-hmm. who is a god in Portland, whose specific key benefit is shooting big shots and generating offense, and trading him for the like keystone of the package being a guy who just did that in the playoffs. I think in a market like that, that's a tough sell, man. I mean, I almost think it's gotta be a three teamer with Portland and they got to rebuild and not do something with $30 million to Ben Simmons. I just don't think so. I don't think he can do that. We'll see, but I don't think he can do that.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think would be the,
it's something.
Idea of them being like, well, we can't trade for Simmons because we're trading a guy who shoots big shots and this guy doesn't. I don't think it's quite as one-to-one as that, but I don't know what's going on in Portland. There's been a ton of very bizarre stories, obviously hiring Chauncey Billups as the 1997 rape accusation comes out. And then the Neil O'Shea press conference was a joke. And I'd encourage you to listen to the Spinsters episode where Haley and Jordan talk about that press conference, which was really poorly handled. And then there was a story today on a couple, I read a collection of stories on True Hoop about like their owner and being connected to Jeffrey Epstein, and weird shit. And there was a penguin skull in there. I read it like just before the podcast. So like, I haven't digested it yet. But also Jason Quinn of The Athletic, who covers Portland, said that he expects them to trade McCollum, which it's tough to get super hyped about McCollum as a Ben trade asset, but as a change of scenery situation, Simmons Lillard is cool. And if you can get McCollum and Cove or something, then I'm more interested. But it's hard to imagine them, Portland, rebuilding unless they fire their GM, Neil Olshey, because they just hired a coach. And
right. The
coach was hired with the idea that it would be a certain way. Not that that hasn't happened before, but there's a ton of turmoil going on there, but like it would be a really sharp pivot to go fully rebuilding. Let's get draft picks after like already, like that's the other thing.
Right.
Like, there's already Houston and Oklahoma City and New Orleans in part, like a ton of teams already have many picks in the future. So as far as like, we're going to package these picks to then go and get a star, they're already like well behind that. I think that there's a world where they trade, probably not Dame, but CJ for, maybe, so let's say it's Dame. They trade Dame for Simmons and a bunch of other stuff and try to go like, let's see what we can do with these guys and be a scrappy playoff team and then go from there. Like, but I guess I just think
how scrappy a playoff team could you be if you traded, if you went from Damian Lillard to Ben Simmons and you were already just a scrappy playoff team?
Yeah, no, it's true. So I just don't think that they're, I think that they will convince themselves if they have to move Dame, if things are irreconcilable, I think that they will convince themselves we can do this while staying competitive.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't work out, then we can always trade Simmons or CJ or whatever for picks down the road, but let's try to like hang on. Like that would be my assumption of a team that most teams don't want to rebuild, you know? Most teams are not dying to tear it down.
They all fight it. You know, Orlando fought it for so long. They do. It's a tough financial decision for a team to do that. So the Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented, or no, brought to you by, not presented by, brought to you by Big Barker Dog Beds. I look at this. Do you hear the sirens? I mean, or the honking? Is it as loud as it seems?
I've heard a couple of them.
Okay. It's a lot of honking. I could use a Big Barker to sleep in tonight. I could use a nice, comfy XL size Big Barker. We got one of my wife's shelter favorites, this dog named Theo, just got a new home. We sent Theo a Big Barker. Big Barkers are the only real dog bed on the market. There are other products that profess to be dog beds. They're not real beds. No. They're not real beds. They're glorified pillows, glorified blankets. You want the only dog bed on the market that is a real dog bed engineered by experts to support your dog's joints. That is Big Barker. It's been proven to promote enhanced energy and mobility levels in older dogs. It reduces wear and tear in younger dogs. It's a real bed. BigBarker.com/Ricky. BigBarker.com/Ricky. We got an email today of somebody that sent a picture of their dog on the Big Barker. They built a frame for the Big Barker. So it was like an actual bed. It looked like it was amazing. I loved it. So BigBarker.com/Ricky, you get the Big Barker dog bed, 2 process pup patches, and then you send us a picture of your dog on the bed. We put them in the process pup gallery. It's just, I'm telling you, there's such an amazing difference. I didn't think there could be. We had Rebel sleeping on some shitty dog bed I saw on Instagram. And then I got the Big Barker and I was like, oh my God, this is such a serious difference. 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. A 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, if your dog doesn't like it, they will give you a full refund and pay for shipping. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. I don't even know what that noise is.
It's a longer one. Yeah. There's a little levels to it.
Do you want to do a little AMA from Twitter? Maybe a little live questions from the chat with CJ, our producer. Producer CJ, there he is.
Yeah.
There he is. Bed's made. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Doing well. Happy to be here.
You got some questions for us?
Yeah. A lot of questions were briefly touched on before, but ask them anyway. Joey DeLuca says, is there any chance in either of your minds that both Harris and Ben could be moved? After watching Booker and Middleton go back and forth, we can't really imagine either Ben or Tobias carrying a team like that in the finals, right?
First of all, I would love for you to read everyone's name in that accent. I would like that no matter what nationality it seems like they're from, just keep doing the same accent for that. So Middleton's interesting because like for years, people were just like comparing him and Tobias as basically the same guy. And saying like, well, Middleton shoots more threes, but for a while he didn't and was reluctant to do it. And so this next level of Middleton's career where he's just done pretty much the same stuff he's done, but just at a very, very high rate at now when the lights are brightest, like that's very impressive. And I think if you're Tobias or Tobias's camp, you probably think, hey, he can do that. Like he can become that guy. He can become a guy that hits tough mid-range shots and is the guy to create and does a little bit of pick and roll and is a little bit elusive. I think Tobias is more like, he's just less shifty. He's more upright. he doesn't seem like he has as much ability
to handle the ball like that. He can't get his own shot.
Well, he can't, but it's not like Middleton's handle is incredibly tight. He's not like breaking guys down off the dribble. He's sort of just getting into his like little 1-2, like turn around the shoulder, like finding a little lane. And there's a flexibility to Middleton's game that I don't think Tobias has, but Tobias is also bigger and is capable of, I think, being more physical than Middleton has been, although obviously reluctant to draw fouls still for whatever reason. So I think I think Tobias took a big step forward this year.
Yeah.
He had a great regular season and was very good at times in the playoffs and was lacking at times. But I think if you're Tobias, you're watching that and going like, I'm going to need to do that. That's who I need to be. And that means working on whatever parts of your game you have to work to get that, because they really were like, people would talk about them as like a pair, as like those kinds of players. And now Middleton's taken a huge leap forward. Tobias took a step forward, but might need to keep going if he wants to be at that level.
I think there is no chance Tobias could do that, even though he did take a step forward. And just to answer the original question, I think there is a very legitimate chance neither one is on the team next year. I don't think I think it's impossible that Ben's here. I don't even know what that noise could be. It's so loud. I think there's no chance Ben is here, but I think there is like a 30% chance Tobias is not here too. So I think it's possible.
I think that you would have said, and I probably would have said, that Chris Middleton could not do the things he's doing right now as of a year ago or 2 years ago. And he was a borderline all-star the way Tobias is. And so I don't know. I'm not so confident in like guys keep getting better and guys that have proven themselves at some level. I don't know. If Middleton's can do it, then maybe Tobias can do it in a different way.
Do you know we once had a Middleton versus Hollis Thompson argument on the pod?
I don't acknowledge anything from the past.
All right.
And good for Middleton, man. Fucking second round pick.
Yeah.
Just like awesome. Just, I love that shit. And that's why the second round matters. And there should be a third round and several more rounds for me.
Yeah. CJ, what's next?
Touching on an earlier topic, Greg Kent says, does the giraffe bones, penguin skulls, bodyguard swimsuit competition, talking about what's going on in Portland right now, get the Sixers any closer to Dame time? Seriously, what are the odds that Dame asks out? Also, if Olshay winds up losing his job over the Bills backlash, would a new regime be more or less likely to trade Dame?
I mean,
it's unknowable. So hard to predict.
Yeah.
The whole thing is so hard to
really predict. Weird article. And I'm not going to make fun of it too much because that article could get released about the Sixers tomorrow.
Yeah. Tad Brown. I don't know Tad Brown. Tad. From the hole
have,
in the
we, have we talked about Tad yet?
No, we haven't. I was going to do it after this. Yeah.
But yeah, I have no idea. I think that there might be, I think that Dame Lillard has read that article? No. There's too many crazy things about it where you're just like, you can't get your bearings at any point during that article. Although it was very good and very interesting. It just, there were too many things. You're getting pelted with like bullets from different parts of it, just falling over again and again. I don't know. I don't know what he values. The report was that he wanted Kidd or Billups. And obviously both of those guys are problematic. And then Bill's got the job and now he's like backing off of that. And I don't know. I don't know what people care about or what the reports of them caring about, how real it is.
Read tweets. I honestly think he saw the backlash and didn't want to be associated with it. And it's fine. He didn't hire the coach, you know, like who knows? Neil Olshay's wanted to hire Chauncey Billups for like 5 years, you know? It's a very strange situation and to your point, impossible to predict what could happen if Olshay gets fired, if he doesn't get fired, who the fuck knows?
I then feel guilty about doing it because it's reductive. It feels reductive to be like, hey, this sexual assault allegation and all these like links to very, you know, shady, weird billionaire fucking kinky shit. Is that going to make Dame come to the Sixers? Like, it just seems such a rant. Yeah. Like, wow. That's a weird line to go to. I'm doing it. And that's the disease of being a fan, but it does make me feel like guilty doing it.
What do we got?
playoff process says, what should we realistically expect from Isaiah Joe and B-Ball Paul for next season?
I think Isaiah Joe needs to come out with a full bodysuit that I can wear during podcasts.
Yeah.
As B-Ball Paul has. I think Isaiah Joe is 100% in the rotation next year if Korkmaz is gone. There's just no reason. He's a really good and willing shooter from distance. He has the makings of some dribble drive game, attacking closeout in the way that like Mikal Bridges has improved that part of his game. You just need to have a little bit of that and you become a much more valuable player than just a guy that stands there. And he tries on defense, and you know, everyone's going to say, and rightfully so, he just needs to get stronger this offseason, and hopefully we'll be taking the offseason to do it. I did notice that Doc, when he talks about the rookies, he talks about Maxi and B-Ball Paul being the two hardest workers he's ever been around.
Isaiah Joe doesn't mention Isaiah Joe.
Not mentioned there.
Yeah.
But that might not mean he's not a hard worker. It just mean he might be a regular hard worker, not in the Maxi B-Ball Paul type of way. But I think B-Ball Paul should absolutely have a chance at the backup center minutes. And I think that Isaiah Joe should absolutely be in the quiet tournament for Korkmaz's minutes.
Part of the reason he doesn't mention Isaiah Joe is because Maxi and B-Ball Paul get asked about all the time, you know, in press conferences. Maxi because he plays, and then B-Ball Paul because everybody just likes saying B-Ball Paul, I think is, but they both get asked about, which is different than Isaiah Joe, who I don't think gets asked about at all. I think Isaiah Joe, what's that? Yeah. I think Isaiah Joe has a real chance at being a rotation player. And I have no idea with the minute I heard B-Ball Paul is like 23, I thought a little bit different about him. So, why don't we do one more, CJ?
Yeah, we got a rapid fire food AMA from at Jack Nice, our very own Abby, and at DC underscore Matt.
Uh-oh.
What's your go-to snack, favorite desserts, and ketchup on scrambled eggs? Yes or no?
My go-to snack is definitely a Made Good bar. They have a bunch of different kinds of them. They're like basically a granola bar, but doesn't have any nuts or anything in them. And I have a nut allergy. Yeah. And they're also gluten-free, and they're really tasty. And they have a bunch of different kinds. And they're not like health food tasty. They're just like tasty, tasty. So I eat those all the time, at least once a day. Go-to dessert, pie. Pie all the time. Big pie guy. Pie is a treat. Mm-hmm. Any kind. So many good kinds. I feel like we've ranked pies before, but very high on pie. And ketchup on eggs, sometimes. When I feel gross, I think the answer is yes. When I want to feel just like a sloppy, like 15-year-old, I'll do it. I like it. I don't feel good about myself when I do it, but I do like it.
So I assume go-to snack, they want some sort of like bad for you snack, but the snack I eat every day is a green apple with crunchy peanut butter. I just fucking love it. It's the best combination in the world, and I love it. What was the other thing? Dessert. Go-to dessert is ice cream. I wish I don't eat regular ice cream anymore, but I do think oat ice cream is actually really, really solid, and there's a lot of good vegan ice creams out there that are pretty close, I think. Or maybe it's just been too long, and I think that they're pretty close. But ice cream is – and look, I don't put ketchup on eggs, but it's not bad. You know, it's pretty good. It looks gross as fuck. Like when people do it, it just looks sloppy. But yeah. I think it's fine. I don't.
I usually go adobo seasoning on eggs, and that does it for me.
Yeah. All right. CJ, unless you have an urgent one, we're gonna move on. What do you think?
You asked for my top five favorite rap songs of the decade.
Okay. All right, what do you got? Yeah.
In no particular order, got Penguins by Young Dolph and Key Glock. Communion.
I don't know who that is. All right. Am I going to know who any of these are? I even know who rap artists are. Okay.
Probably not. Bruh by J.I.D. and Denzel Curry. Pressure in My Palms by Aminé and Vince Staples and Slow Tie.
I know who Vince
Prada
Staples
to Bang.
Is.
Yeah, Vince Staples. Prada to Bang by Addy K and Young Thug. And then Hooligan. Hooligan by Baby Keem. Those are my top
good
five.
For you, man. I haven't heard of any music released in the last 11 years. I opted out. They're all gone.
All right.
I heard a well-sourced report that a band that we like might have something new coming. I actually don't even guess. Don't even guess, because I shouldn't have even said anything. But there may be a mutual, something that we mutually like, is what I would say. The mailbag has been brought to us by Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter, which came out today. By the way, I was on the website looking at the Stateside Vodka sodas in four flavors, black cherry, orange, pineapple, and lemon cucumber mint. It's out of stock online. We sold them out. Yeah,
they are filling my fridge right now. I finally have a fridge that is a double door fridge. I don't know if that's what they're called. But the left side of, there's sauces on the right side, and then just Stateside vodkas on the left. The whole fridge is Stateside vodka. So I support and I like.
Well, go to the website and wait for the sodas to come out. They're awesome. No added sugar, no artificial flavors, no gluten, nothing. 95 calories, just fruit juice, vodka, and soda, I guess, soda water. But while you're there, get some Stateside vodka. Statesidevodka.com, you got to be 21. All right. So the Sixers hired a new CEO.
Tad.
Former Daryl Morey co-worker.
Thaddeus Brown.
So Tad Brown has been with the Rockets for 15 years. Here is a quote, the only quote worth anything from the Woj story on it, talking about Tad and Daryl Morey. In 13 years together with the Rockets, Brown and Morey oversaw a 640 and 400 record, second best in the NBA during that time. They've long described a, quote, shorthand of understanding and conversation that has been beneficial in collaboration. And this line I was surprised at. Brown and Morey both are described as, quote, being where their feet are. No, I mean, that didn't happen. But so new CEO, I don't know. I mean, as soon as Morey got here, fucking Scott O'Neill's, the ticket was written. And I almost think they hired this guy just to rub it in so everybody would know.
That's great. Good for them. There's no funnier. I laugh at any name that is three letters with two consonants sandwiching a vowel. Tad, Len, Bob, and it's such an American thing. Kip, just like anybody, there it is. Just a quick in and out. Tad.
What do you think of a bow? What do you think of a two-letter name?
Two's a different situation because it's usually a nickname short for something. But I like any of those. Any of those names really get me. And so Tad is one that just tickles me. Who cares? who gives a shit?
Yeah. That's the way it should be. You shouldn't
have to care. You shouldn't have to hear about him. I like that Daryl got his guy. I can't imagine, in the same way that like getting Danny Green and Seth Curry was like a move to be like, it's Joel Embiid's team that we care about. This getting Tad must be like it's Daryl's team and he's going to be here for a long time. And so let's make this work. And so I'm all about it. Tad. How about Tad?
He also
did say like he was, I think this is always bullshit. And I can't imagine that James Harden would ever say this, but like they said, oh, Harden looks to him like a godfather figure or like some type of like mentor or something, and he was instrumental in keeping him there. I don't believe that shit, but I did read it, and I think I saw Zoe tweet about it and be like, all right, Harden's coming here, we're getting him after all. But probably not.
Before I read this one mailbag question, who the fuck were those rappers that CJ was talking about? I mean, it's just like I am, for a 44 year old guy, I pay attention to current music in a much more, and I don't know who any of those guys are. Are they SoundCloud rappers? Is that what they are? Are they SoundCloud rappers?
Many of them are pretty prominent. You've heard of Young Thug.
Young Thug I've heard of. Young Thug and Vince Staples I've heard of, but the other ones I haven't heard of. I haven't heard of any of them.
They're all relatively popular. Those are not like super underground songs. Like if you listen to rap, AU most definitely knows all of them.
Oh, AU's a big fraud. That's all I have to say about that.
I've always respected underground rap and just felt like I could never know how to find it. Like it felt like a club that doesn't have a sign. And I was just like, I think I might be interested in this, but I've just never been allowed in to the club. They keep like the door keeps changing and I just don't know the code. And so I've listened to so little any rap that would be described as underground. I like overground rap, but I don't know. Maybe CJ makes me a mixtape. Who knows?
One mailbag question, right? strickysanchez@gmail.com is where you send your questions. I'm sorry, they're piling up, but we're doing the live thing. Anyway, this comes from Steve. It comes on the heels of this past weekend was the 8-year anniversary of the Ricky. 8 years of the Ricky as of July 10th. The only person that remembered, as usual, is LL. So thank you for reminding me, LL. 8 years of the Ricky. This comes from Steve, an Australian. I am trying to get my friends to start listening to the podcast. And I know you're not going to know this answer, but I figured you could ruminate a little bit. I'm trying to get my friends to start listening to the podcast. What are the top 5 episodes that I can give them to fully immerse themselves?
I think you pressed the mute button. Or at least I can.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear the end of the?
No, you just straight up hit the mute button talk show host just holding the mic and just swaying around.
No, I forgot the thing. I forgot the bass. So did you even hear the mailbag question?
Five episodes to listen to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What are the 5 episodes so I can fully immerse them, so they can fully immerse themselves in all that is the Ricky. So I'm thinking about this now.
I don't feel like any episode makes us look good.
No. But what if you listen to when we found out about Burnergate?
Sure.
The Okafor draft episode, the Hinkie firing episode.
Those are all heavy episodes, though.
Well, but I don't know. I think you'd probably have to pick the Embiid interview. Yeah. And I posted the first one with you on the phone, obviously at 5 in the morning. I think it would be if people could submit what they think they'd be. Those are the ones that stick out in my mind that I remember doing. I'm sure there were some funny ones and some good ones, but those are the episodes that stick out in my mind.
The Kawhi shot, I don't know what I said on it.
Yeah, I just know that you were in the dark, right?
I was in the dark. No, I don't know if I was in the dark. I was laying on the ground. I don't know if I was in the dark officially. I've been in the dark in a couple of podcasts. It's really the podcast is just watching my slow descent into whatever it is I'm in right now. Although I do think that this year I've bounced back quicker than I thought it would. Not to like be excited about the Sixers, but just to not be as physically ill as I have been in years past. Maybe that is because I'm busy. I think that's helped.
The moment where the Sam Hinkie interview, where the connection dies and we leave that in the podcast, is also a very good one. Mm-hmm. And then the TJ live pod, also very good. So, all right.
I don't know if the live pods ever translate to not being there. They feel stupid. Whenever I've listened to a live podcast, I feel like my voice makes it sound like I think I'm getting such big laughs and such like, oh, I'm crushing right now. And then on the podcast, listening to it, I'm like, who is this guy? Shut the hell up. Well, like, it just doesn't seem, well, it doesn't convey as much in person.
Yeah. I think the problem, we don't mic the crowd or anything. So they're just room recording. So, all right. We will talk to you this weekend. That's all we got.
Go Suns. Start doing draft stuff. It's coming up.
Oh yeah. The draft is 2 weeks away, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we could get a draft person for this weekend.
I've been putting some feelers out.
I'll just check out for the second half of the pod.
You can lay down and just listen to the noise of the cars.
The horns. Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you this weekend. You down with TTP?
Yeah, you know Lickface.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.